You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. How's everybody doing out there? It's been a crazy week, and we're just all trying to play catch up. And this week is going to be a very interesting topic for us to talk about. It's something that's very relevant with going on with the Me Too movement and such. And we are going to be talking all about the Weinstein effect and, you know, its ramifications, not just on Hollywood, but on entertainment itself or business and relations between men and women and, you know, coworkers and people you're friends with. And, you know, it's just how big of an effect it's having. It's just amazing to think about, you know, what it's done and how people are finally paying attention to it and taking it seriously. A lot of times people would want this whole topic put under the carpet and not even talked about, like brush it down and such. And I'm glad it's out there, and this show might not be all for all the young ones out there, or certain people in the audience might not find this very, you know, pleasing. So we're warning you guys at the beginning of this one, you know, please, you know, parental guidance on this one. It's going to definitely be an explicit tag, and, you know, we're not pulling any punches on it. You know, when we talk about stuff, we talk about it. And speaking about talking about it, let's say hey to Mr. Howdy himself, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
It's a big one, sir.
It is. You know, I'm excited to talk about, you know, something in depth that's affecting our, not only our pop culture, certainly the entertainment industry and all walks of life, really. So it's something that I thought, you know, when we added it to the schedule, I think both of us were, you know, kind of like, well, should we do this? And we were like, you know what, we should do this. It's something that we want to talk about, and we want to just sort of get other people's opinions on and have a nice civil, a civil discussion on these topics. And we may, you know, we've done it before. We don't do it very often, but we, you know, when necessary, we feel like, and when warranted, was it last year, a year before, we did, a look at, you know, cosplay and concerns that that were happening throughout the convention scene that I think we wanted to make people aware of, and anything that we can do to make people aware of things that are going on that that are not to be tolerated, I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's just not for, you know, like we said, stars and TV and movies, it's everywhere across the board, folks. And
it really is. I mean, when the Me Too movement came out, I mean, it wasn't just actresses and, you know, wannabe models and all that saying, you know, using that hashtag. I mean, it was, you know, it was mothers, daughters, cousins, sisters, you know, colleagues. It was.
But it's also brothers and sons. And
yes, yes, that's true. That's true.
And so it's just not female. It's also male. And, you know, everyone's affected by it by somehow. And we're going to talk all about that. So, you know, please email us at our new email address, which is, of course, earthstation1@esonetwork.com. You know, we definitely want to hear from you, or call us at 404-963-9057. You know, there's a lot to talk about, and we're going to cut the rants and raves fairly short this week. And, you know, want to thank everyone who's been doing our Patreon for the network. It's been fabulous, and hearing from people, and we're actually going to have original content up there very, very soon this week. So we'll definitely be talking more about that maybe later in the show, but let's get, you know, started with this episode. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with our Geek Seat segment.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. We've actually got quite a few movies to talk about this week, so I'm going to go ahead and just dive on in. First, we have the Red Sparrow movie, which from the premise kind of sounds like it could actually be that Black Widow origin film the MCU keeps putting off. Anyway, Red Sparrow is about a ballerina who was recruited to join the Sparrow School, which is a Russian intelligence service. And by recruited, I mean she's more like blackmailed into joining this organization. This one looks kind of interesting, especially as that Black Widow movie from the MCU continues to be uncertain. So this might be an exciting one to check out. We also have the remake Death Wish, which stars Bruce Willis as a surgeon who decides to take justice into his own hands and get revenge on the people who attacked his family. I haven't heard much about or seen much advertising for this one, so to me it kind of looks more like a straight-to-DVD movie, but it's coming out in theaters. And finally, I'm actually going to rewind a week and talk about Annihilation, which actually came out in theaters this past weekend, but I didn't get a chance to talk about in my blurb, and I really want to. This one was really interesting. It was one of my most anticipated movies of the year, and it's actually a really weird movie. That's not a bad thing, but just be warned, it is a weird movie. It's a trippy sci-fi thriller about a team of explorers and scientists who are sent into this anomaly known as the Shimmer. Other teams have gone in, no one's come out. And there's some weird kind of biological mutation things going on in there. Won't say any more to avoid spoilers, but if you didn't get a chance to see it this past weekend, definitely make some time for it this weekend if you like sci-fi. It's a really interesting movie. On DVD this week, we've also got quite a few coming out as well. First, we have Pixar's Coco, which is based on the Day of the Dead celebration. And I didn't get a chance to see this one in theaters and have heard lots of good things about it. So I'm really looking forward to renting it now that it's coming out on DVD. We also have on DVD Murder on the Orient Express, which was based on an Agatha Christie murder mystery. And we did a review on this one a couple months back for ESO. It's a fun, it's a good rainy day mystery movie. If you haven't seen it yet, definitely check it out. And then finally, we have a movie that's getting some Oscar buzz. It's Darkest Hour, in a World War II drama starring Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill. Also heard lots of good things about that one. Might want to check it out before the Oscars. And that's it for this week. Like I said, lots of good movies coming out in theaters and on DVD, so be sure to check some of those out. And if you're looking for other entertainment-related content, my blog is boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
In a world where podcasters talk about the same old pop culture topics, two heroes must rise to bring forth a new era of podcast entertainment. The Cigar Nerds Podcast. Movie reviews, pop culture debates, news, science, and even beer reviews. We're stranger than Stranger Things and funnier than an evil sewer clown. CigarNerdPodcast.com.
We all smoke down here, Georgie.
What a terrible thing to lose. It's a living thing. It's a terrible thing to lose.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the Geeksy segment, and we are joined this time by author Marlene Barr. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So you want to tell everyone about your work?
Yes, I do. I am a feminist science fiction scholar, which I think is the most geeked out thing that you could possibly do. And late in my career, I turned to fiction writing. And I just have forthcoming from BQ Press, the first single authored short story collection about Trump. And it's called When Trump Changed, the Feminist Science Fiction Justice League Quashes the Orange Outrage Pussy Grabber. And the subtitle is a little long, and the When Trump Changed title, that alludes to feminist science fiction writer Joanna Russ's When It Changed, which is my favorite feminist science fiction story. It's about a planet called Wileaway that's a feminist separatist utopia, and When It Changed applies to when the men landed. And I also mean when Trump changed, and Trump in reality is never going to change, and I change him in science fiction. I do every science fiction trope imaginable to him. I have feminist extraterrestrials transporting him to the Phantom Zone. I make him climb up a beanstalk where he meets three little pigs which look like him. I have him marry Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You name it, I do it to him. And last but not least, I have an alternative history where Hillary becomes the president.
Wow. You do seem like you have a really great imagination there. That's pretty awesome.
Well, if you spent your life being a feminist science fiction scholar, I guess it precludes having a good imagination.
No, it sounds amazing, and I love your point of view, too. So that's even better.
Again, I studied science fiction tropes my entire life. I'm very creative, and I just took it all out and threw it all at him. And the first single-authored short story collection about Trump, it was hard to do, because if you write a novel, that is one story arc. But I had to sit for a year writing 33 different science fiction things that happened to him.
Oh, wow.
And even though the book is now in press, I'm still writing. And my apartment is like the trouble with tribbles. I'm having Trump stories all over, and I can't stop. But I guess I have to stop. There has to be a limit.
Oh, that is awesome. You know, so tell me, you know, how long you've been writing for?
I have been writing feminist science fiction criticism, which is work for other science fiction scholars, for my whole life. And in the early 2000s, I decided that I wanted to write a novel. And a very famous science fiction scholar said, "Marlene, shut up and stop telling me that you're going to write the novel and do the goddamn thing." So I wrote a novel, and then I wrote another novel, and I published both novels, and now I started with my Trump stories. But I'm not known as a fiction writer. I'm known as a feminist science fiction scholar. And it's very rare for an English professor to turn to humorous fiction writing, because academic criticism is not funny.
No, I'm sure.
And it's sort of like two languages. And I could switch back and forth between sounding like a scholar and sounding like a funny short story writer. But there's a little bit of humor. There's always been a little bit of humor and fiction in my scholarship. I did the first science fiction edition of PMLA, which is the most prestigious literature journal in the country. And I was scared to do the first science fiction issue, so I had a colleague and a friend come in and be a co-editor with me. And in PMLA, in my introduction, I put in a feminist talking giant squid. And putting a feminist talking giant squid in PMLA is like the President of the United States doing the State of the Union address in a bathing suit. And even Trump didn't do that. And I put a zap gun on the cover of PMLA. And that is the achievement of my life.
Oh, wow. That's pretty amazing.
Yes. I will never do anything as outrageous as having a zap gun on the cover of PMLA.
I could totally see that. And, you know, especially if the orange Cheeto doesn't have to be seen holding that.
No, the orange Cheeto will never pick up PMLA. On this, I bet my life.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. So how can people find you? You know, where can they find your writings and such?
Well, the anthology, the When Trump Changed, that's coming out from BQ Press on April 1st, and you can get it on Amazon, or you can order it from BQ Press. And I have a Facebook account, and my Twitter handle is at Marlene Barr.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll be sure to subscribe to you and join you up on Twitter.
Thank you.
Most definitely, and definitely would recommend it, because I've seen some of your stuff, and it's just amazing.
Really? What stuff have you seen?
You sent me some links when we started talking,
yes.
And I followed those, and I liked what you wrote, and that's
Thank you.
That is definitely part of the reason I'm glad to have you up here. And the other part of the reason we have you up here is you're our next victim in the geek seat.
I'm ready for the geek seat, but I wanted to ask you, is the geek seat made of Naugahyde?
No, It's plywood and, you know, some, you know, rough staple guns and, you know, some rope tied together with it.
Oh, good. Because now I don't have to go rescue the poor little Norgus. All right. That's one problem I don't have. Good.
You're safe with that part. But, you know, hope you're okay with ropes.
Yes.
Perfect. So your first question then in the geek seat is, what was your favorite geek out moment?
Well, it involves President Obama. And I think Obama was the geek in chief. And I love him because he was literate and he wrote books and he could talk and read. And one night I was walking down Park Avenue and there was nobody on Park Avenue but me and this whole bunch of police. And the street was closed. And I said to the cops, why are you here and why is the street closed? And they said, well, Obama is going to come down Park Avenue. And it was just like me and the cops, nobody. And it was all dark. And I wanted to tell Obama that I love him, but I was afraid to scream at the president with 30 policemen there. So I said, officers, is it okay if I tell Obama and scream at the top of my lungs and say, I love you? And the police laughed and they said, that's okay, because they had like guns and I didn't want to start screaming at the president. So on the dark Park Avenue street, Obama goes by in his limousine and I screamed at the top of my lungs, I love you. I love you. You're the greatest president. I love you. Hooray.
Well, that's awesome.
I did that and he had to hear me.
I hope he did.
I know he did because I have a very big mouth. And I was screaming, so he couldn't miss.
That is awesome. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Well, this also involves seeing a celebrity in New York. And before he was running for president, I was walking down Fifth Avenue, and I saw Trump on the street in front of Barnes & Noble. And there was this whole crowd around him, and he was screaming his head off and acting like a big hulking moron. And it was sickening. Like I saw him in the flesh yelling, and I was sick to my stomach.
Oh, I'm sure that's a lot of people felt that way.
Yeah. But like to see him on the street in person with his stupid orange head screaming his mouth off, like really screaming in the street. I couldn't believe it.
Really? Oh. Yeah.
Well, he's right.
Makes America proud. What geeks you out the most?
Well, since I'm a feminist science fiction scholar, I have to say feminist science fiction. And I devoted my life to this. And starting out as a feminist science fiction scholar was not an easy thing to do because I'm one of the first pioneering mothers of the field. And when I started, people thought that science fiction was crap, and people thought that feminist science fiction was worse crap. But I feel that I was right at the beginning of my career because people valorize Octavia Butler and Ursula Le Guin, and The Handmaid's Tale is a hit television show. And in my beginning days, I said that this is wonderful, and I was responsible for the publication of the first scholarly article about Octavia Butler. And I did an anthology called Afrofuture Females, which was the first anthology about black women and science fiction. And Octavia Butler gave me one of her stories because she remembered that I did that. And I said, well, what can I give you for compensation? And she said, all that I want is a copy of the anthology when it comes out. And very, very sadly, I was never able to do that.
Oh.
And when Ursula Le Guin died 2 weeks ago, I was devastated. I was sitting and watching the PBS NewsHour, and I saw the picture of Ursula Le Guin in the upper left-hand corner of the screen, and my heart said, oh, my God, that's what they do when someone's dead. And then I said, well, maybe she did something wonderful, and they're going to celebrate her. And then Judy Woodruff said that Ursula Le Guin is dead, and I just screamed at the television screen, no.
Oh, wow.
And I was devastated. I've been thinking about her for my whole life, and when I was starting out, she was the outside reader for my collected essays, Lost in Space. So she extended a hand to me, and I never forgot that. And when I was a graduate student at SUNY Buffalo, I had famous professors like Leslie Fiedler and Norman Holland, and I was running around Buffalo going, Leslie, Norm, you have to read Ursula Le Guin. You have to see this. Ursula's great. And they didn't know that, and then they believed me, and they agreed. And I wrote a remembrance for Ursula Le Guin just last week for Nature magazine, and I'm honored that I was able to do that because a lot of people read it and they'll be able to see how much I loved her.
That is awesome. Let's look at the flip side of that, though. What turns your geek off?
Snobbish English professors who think that science fiction is crap.
Oh, I could totally see that. And that's still very prevalent nowadays.
Well, it's better than it used to be. And there's two generations of women science fiction scholars that follow me because I'm a baby boomer. So there are the 40-year-olds and the 20-year-olds. And I feel very happy that I did the work that I did because it will always be there. And the snotty male English professors who told me that feminist science fiction is crap, well, they're all dead now, and I'm still here, and my work is here, and I'm glad I had the courage of my convictions to do what I did.
That is awesome. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Superman. Mm-hmm. I love Superman. I read Superman comic books as a child. I had no talent that I couldn't sing or I couldn't play the piano or I couldn't be a ballerina, and the only thing I could do is read, and I read Superman comic books. My father brought me one every Saturday, and I just loved it, and I loved the Legion of Superheroes and Kryptonite, and I loved the idea of flying around and saving people and things, and that's why I became a science fiction scholar, because of Superman.
Wow, that's awesome. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
This is easy. Hannibal Lecter.
Well, you'd become his favorite lunch, I'd assume.
Please, I'm always counting calories, but I don't want to be anybody else's lunch. I can't watch those movies. They scare me to death.
I could totally understand that. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Well, here I have to speak my two languages, and in my writer language, I would say, may the force be with you.
That's wonderful.
And to stick my fingers apart, and I loved it when Mr. Spock said, may the force be with you. And if someone is doing something that's a little scary, I really do say, may the force be with you. And favorite geek words or phrases, maybe English professor words like hegemonic and reify and jouissance.
Wow.
Nobody knows what they mean except other English professors, and I teach them to my students, but I tell them don't try them at home and don't say them outside of the classroom where you won't have any friends.
What is your ideal geek occupation?
Obviously, being a feminist science fiction professor.
Well, you hit it right on the head there.
There aren't many of us in the world still. You can count us on your hands, but it's proliferated since I was one of the people who started this.
What geek occupation would you not like to do?
I would not like to be a proctologist.
Ooh, ow. Yes.
I cannot see spending my whole day doing that.
No, there's enough assholes out in the world. You don't need to do that for a living.
Yes, I can't. I mean, it's a necessary thing, but I could not imagine doing that as a living. No.
I could totally see that. Nope. All right, Marlene, are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
I am ready for my final question in the geek seat.
Okay. What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
I have written about this. My ultimate geek fantasy is knowing for sure that if feminist extraterrestrials came to planet Earth, they would come and find me. Because who are you going to call? Who else are you going to call if you're a feminist extraterrestrial from a feminist separatist planet like Wileaway, but a feminist science fiction expert? And I invented this alter ego professor who is in my stories and in my novels. Her name is Professor Sandra Lear, and she's really me. but she's better than me. She's like always in her 30s, and she's thinner than I am now. And the feminist extraterrestrials are always landing in Sandra's office to meet her, and she goes and has adventures with them. And in my Trump anthology, when Trump changed, I have Sandra running off with the feminist extraterrestrials and having the flying saucer land on the White House lawn. And when they say, take me to your leader, she says to them, you don't really want to meet him. But then they insist and they land on the White House lawn and do stuff to him.
Oh, okay. Yes. Marlene, you have made it through the geek seat. Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've made it through the geek seat, and now you're one of us. Congratulations.
Yay.
Yay. So how can people find your work?
You could find it. When Trump changed, the Feminist Science Fiction Justice League quashes the Orange Outrage Pussy Grabber. It's coming out April 1st from BQ Press. That's B as in boy with my New York accent. And you can buy it on Amazon.
That is awesome. And we'll have links up to your work up on our show notes.
Thank you.
No problem. You said you wanted to take a few minutes to read some of your work.
Yeah, I have a very short story that I think exemplifies my humor and how I extrapolate and take Trump and put him into reality in terms of my reality and his reality. And this is a story about Sandra, and it's based on my reality that I had a tooth removed and they put cadaver bone in my jaw. They really did. And in the story, something happens in terms of having the cadaver cells put in my jaw, and it's called Two Trump Heads Are Better Than One. Professor Sandra Lear, a feminist science fiction scholar who teaches at the Metropolitan University of New York, could not ignore the persistent pain in her molar. Thus, it came to pass that she found herself sitting in an oral surgeon's chair about to have her tooth extracted. Do you want me to put growth material in your gum to facilitate implant insertion? Asked Dr. Doogie Horowitz. Sandra, who was scared as hell that she was about to be decapitated, nodded her head affirmatively. When she returned for her post-operative checkup, she asked for details about what had been inserted in her mouth. Bone, Dr. Horowitz said. What kind of bone? Bone from a cadaver. What if the cadaver wasn't Jewish? I might have Goyish bone cells reproducing in my jaw. Sandra went home and fell asleep. Upon awakening, she felt a weird sensation on her shoulder. She looked into a mirror and saw a second head attached to her body. The head did not look like a normal head. It had a small pursed mouth, steely eyes framed by white makeup, and a very strange orange haircut. Yes, Trump's talking head was pervasive in the all-Trump, all-the-time media circus. But having Trump's head attached to her body right next to her own head was the limit. Sandra immediately phoned the surgeon. I have an emergency. The cells go into Trump's head, not new jawbone. Oops, said Dr. Horowitz. The cells I used came from Trump's deceased parents, who were buried locally in New Hyde Park. Instead of simply generating new jawbone cells, these cells grew into a completely formed Trump head. Will I gain weight? Trump is not thin, and he eats, I can barely say it, fried taco shells. And if he has access to my hands, does that mean that he can grope my pussy? The Trump head has no control over your body. How do I get my normal Trump headless body back? I need some time to research this unprecedented question. Sandra decided to get a heads up on the situation by seeking an audience with Trump himself in Trump Tower. She put on a burqa to disguise the Trump heads. Politically correct New Yorkers, loath to stare at a burqa-clad woman, would not notice the covered shoulder protrusion. Sandra entered Trump Tower and asked to speak to Trump. Fearing that a woman wearing a burqa had to be a terrorist, Secret Service agents swarmed around her. Frantically frisking her in search of a gun or a bomb, they instead closely encountered Trump's head. I'm not a terrorist, Sandra insisted. I obviously have a huge problem. Trump has a swelled head. Maybe he has a suggestion. The agents escorted Sandra to Trump's apartment. He became enraged when he saw his head attached to Sandra. Get me a guillotine, screamed Trump. Two Trump heads are definitely not better than one. Sir, presidents are not allowed to behead people, said a Secret Service agent. Trump began to tweet, Dr. Sandra Leah doesn't know how to use my head, not. He then continued to shout, I'll use the nuclear codes to explode the hell out of the imposter Trump head. Sir, implored the agent, it is not advisable to deploy nuclear weapons simply because the second Trump head hurts your ego. Can't we blame the Mexicans? Initiate a travel ban to prevent any other Trump head from entering the country? Trump's real head, not his alternative head, suddenly exploded. Flying cranium shards became projectiles, which hit the Trump head attached to Sandra and severed it. Both Trump heads lay on the floor. Dr. Horowitz closed the hole in Sandra's shoulder. She recovered completely and survived 4 years of President Pence. Although she did not agree with Pence, she was grateful that he was not sick in his head. That's the end.
Wow. That was pretty amazing.
Thank you.
That was a great story, Marlene. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You. Thank you for allowing me to read it and share it with the listeners.
Oh, my pleasure. And like we said, you could follow the links on the show note and definitely find Marlene Barr's work up online. And she will have her book out in April on Amazon.com.
And it's forthcoming from B Cubed Press.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us again.
And thank you for having me. I had a wonderful experience speaking with you.
Thank you. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back and we're going to be talking all about the Weinstein effect.
Hey everybody, Michelle with the Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment here, and still totally psyched because over the weekend Mike and I got a chance to check out Prince at the Tabernacle in Atlanta, and they tore it up. They tore it up. Everybody in that band has got to be one of the most underrated players ever. And I think the tour's wrapped up for now, but if they go back out, if you get a chance to see them, you need to check them out because they kick butt, I'm telling you. Speaking of Prince, Janelle Monáe's third album, Dirty Computer, comes out April 27th, and the lead single, Make Me Feel, is already out. It's total Prince-style jam, funky synth, scratch guitar, and according to Prince's DJ, Lenka Paris, he actually contributed to the album. She recognized the synth line when she heard the song and said that he played it for her at a party she played for him a little more than 2 years ago. The song is awesome. It's just great, but I think Prince would wag his finger at her for the F-bombs. I don't think he'd go for that. More music from those who've left us. Chris Cornell's contribution to the album Johnny Cash Forever Words has been released. The album's being supervised and co-produced by Cash's son, John Carter Cash, and it's a collection of songs using Johnny Cash's unused letters and poetry and lyrics. Cornell's song is taken from a 1967 track called You Never Knew My Mind, combined with another unreleased song called I Never Knew Your Mind. Cornell was a big Johnny Cash fan, and his take on the song is it's melodic and it's really dialed back and restrained, but still immensely powerful and really raw. The album comes out April 6th and includes Alison Krauss and Union Station, Casey Musgraves, Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, and also Cash's stepdaughter, Carlene Carter, and his daughter, Roseanne Cash. Sade is contributing a song to Ava DuVernay's A Wrinkle in Time. It's her first new song in 7 years, and it's called Flower of the Universe. DuVernay says that she never thought Sade would say yes, but she asked anyway, and says they began a journey together she'll never forget and that the song is a dream come true. Can't wait to hear it. She also described Sade as a goddess, but hey, we knew that. The Who's legendary 68 show at Fillmore East has been fully restored, remixed, and will be released April 20th as a double CD and triple LP. The second CD is completely taken up by a 33-minute version of My Generation that ends in a guitar and drum smashing demolition. Also, Roger Daltrey will publish his memoirs later this year, and no question, that's going to be a story to hear. And thanks to our friends Kevin and Cornflake at the Flopcast for this tip. Dr. Demento, God bless him, 76 years old, is releasing a 64-track double CD triple LP called Dr. Demento Covered in Punk, with new recordings of tracks that have been associated with the Good Mad Doctor for almost 50 years of his show. Even better, the Good Doctor himself will provide intros and outros to all the songs, just like on his show. And from what I hear, he even throws in the little factoid that the Muppets' Mana Mana came from the soundtrack to an early 70s softcore porn film. Let's all think about that for a minute. The record includes one of the last things Adam West did before his passing last year. He does a version of The Thing, originally done by Phil Harris in 1950, and it's got a track from William Shatner, a song called Garbage Man. Other performers include Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Fred Schneider of B-52s, Dead Milkmen, Missing Persons, Lost Straitjackets, tons of people. The Vandals cover Tom Lehrer's National Brotherhood Week. You have to have some Lehrer in any Demento project. And if you're not familiar with Tom Lehrer and you love snark, nobody does snark like Tom Lehrer. You need to check him out. Just some brilliant subversive stuff. And is Weird Al on it? Did you have to ask that? Really? He is, and he's covering the Ramones' Beat on the Brat. It's his first non-original and non-parody recording. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Check out the blog at iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, and we will check you out next time.
Welcome back, everyone. And now we are going to discuss a topic that it became a thing last year. I mean, last year in some ways was so great as far as the role and the character of women in pop culture with the success of Wonder Woman in the beginning of the year. But then towards the end of the year, I think specifically around October, made headlines. Harvey Weinstein made headlines, and the Weinstein effect is still going on. And so we thought we'd talk about it in a frank way. And to do that, we have joining us our honorary co-host. I can call you that, Lacey, right? Lacey Arnold is back on the station.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, howdy. How's it going? How you been?
Doing good, doing good. Well, just recovering from, some fun this
weekend.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit about that later in the Con Report. So we're anxious for that. So welcome back.
Thank you, thank you.
And Dacoma Sanchez is with us.
Hey, hey.
Welcome to the main part of the station.
Why, thank you. It's a rare experience where I get to be invited into the cool kids club.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you kind of got lost in this month in the Dragon Con report section. So
yeah,
I'm glad you made your way up here.
Work swallowed me.
Well, look, obviously this is a topic that can go all sorts of ways, right?
Yes.
So I guess we'll start with exactly what you think, what's you guys's take on what's happening, like what happened last year, obviously with the news of what Harvey Weinstein was accused of. I don't think took everybody by surprise, as far as the way Hollywood is, like they don't have a term called the casting couch for nothing, right?
This
is something that's been part of Hollywood for as long as there's been Hollywood. So, but last year, really, you know, all of a sudden it seemed like, you know, a stand was made. This is unacceptable. And I'm kind of interested in both of you and Mike too, like all of our takes on it. And let's discuss that a little bit. So, Dacoma, we'll start with you.
Okay. You're right. They have a phrase called the casting couch, and it's been one of those things that people in and outside of Hollywood have always joked about. Anybody who's wanted to get into the business is, oh, you have to sleep your way up to the top, or you have to do something for someone. And it's that way in a lot of industries, or it seems that way in a lot of industries. The quote unquote Weinstein effect, which I don't like calling it, because honestly, there are women who have been experiencing and men who have been experiencing this kind of harassment and things for eons now. But while it is bringing a light to it, and I do greatly defend it, I take everything with a grain of salt. And I do think that women who have been victims of Weinstein or some of the many, many other public figures who have come forward, I feel like they're in a stronger circumstance for them to be able to come forward and be viewed as taken more seriously than when an everyday person steps forward and says, I've been sexually harassed or I've been made a victim, at least from my own personal experience.
I think as far as one of the things that I was pleasantly surprised by, and it's hard to use a word like pleasant when you're talking about this, but I do think, you know, what's happened over the course of the last few months, some good is coming out of it.
100%. Yeah.
And what, you know, whereas
my problem at this particular juncture is that while we are starting to see things change in Hollywood, it hasn't quite had that trickle down effect to the everyday person, which is where the majority of this is happening. And while I do still think that it needs to be something that everybody's aware of and is made a point, and I think everybody should have an example made of them, including the people, if there is somebody who's coming forward and has a false claim, like victims goes both ways. You're affecting not just yourself, but everyone involved and everybody associated with those that are involved. But it's definitely something that I would like to see broaden the horizons of awareness.
Yes, yes. And I think to my point, though, I just want to finish my thought before I lose it, because that happens more and more these as I get older. but the year before, during the election, when a lot of allegations were made, it seemed like there was not only were they not taken seriously, there was no repercussions, and the person accused was,
I mean, 100%. And you
was,
know,
the, was almost rewarded, right? So
he got a presidency.
So, it seems like a year later, comes out where, you know, we're.
I don't mean to cut you off, but one of the funny things to look at, if you're looking at it from a political standpoint, is you're watching somebody who's had multiple accusations where he's paid people out and where he will, of course, never completely take fault, come forward before he becomes a president, at the cusp of him possibly becoming a president. And they're kind of brushed off to the side thanks to lawyers and PR, but rewind a decade and you had Bill Clinton, who had a sexual relationship with Monica Lewinsky and was vilified and now has regained that public appearance, but he was vilified for something that he actually did, but he owned what he did. And I don't necessarily want to say that that makes it any better, because it doesn't, but the thing is everybody has to be held accountable.
Yes. Yes, I think that's the key to this.
Right? No matter what level they're at, they have to be.
Yeah, I mean, and the difference between watching somebody who's becoming president have so many accusations drawn up against him and have them just completely pushed to the side, and then having watched somebody have accusations drawn up against him and watch him go ahead and confront those allegations head on is, it's mind-boggling me to watch how everything's kind of flip-flopped.
Yeah. Yeah. Lacey, what about you? What has been your experience of watching all of this, this news come out?
Well, it's not shocking in the least, which is sad.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, I lived in Los Angeles, for a couple of years back in the aughts, and, you know, I was peripherally involved in the film industry, never had any, on set issues. But oddly, working in a different area of Hollywood, I had someone who was famous, we'll just say caress my buttocks, without my request. And I mentioned to him that that was unacceptable and that he needed to take a step back. And later on, my boss reprimanded me for not acquiescing to his request.
Wow. See,
And the thing is, you know, I'm sitting there watching the news with friends and this and that, and somebody said something like, well, you know, this is just rah, 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 whatever. And I turned and I looked and I said, you know, until you have had an unsolicited penis shoved at you in an elevator, you don't get to have that conversation with me. Like, that's just, it's crazy. It's in restaurants, it's in apartment complexes, it's in your home life, it's in your, you know, your work life, it's in every, you know. And then you talk about conventions, the number of people who dress up for conventions and stuff. And a lot of times people feel like cosplay means yes. If you're wearing an outfit, that means that people can touch you.
Well, that was the whole thing behind, you know, the cosplay is not consent.
Yeah, the fact that we had to make that a campaign, like, you know, people had to make that a campaign, like a thing, like actually say like, hey, guess what? This is not okay. Like, it speaks volumes. When, you know, the Me Too movement, which has come out of this, right? And then maybe that is a better name for this movement rather than the Weinstein effect. But you know, when it first, you know, sort of took off and so many people, so many women in particular were using the hashtag. And I remember, you know, talking to friends, relatives, whatever, and people were surprised by how many, you know, and where they were coming from. And it was like, I sort of said, really? I mean, haven't you hung around men like most of your life? Because this is, it didn't surprise me. As a matter of fact, if anything, I thought it was still underrepresented.
I mean, and what's sad is, to be honest, aside from my absolute youngest sister, and that's only because she probably hasn't told me, I don't know a single woman that hasn't experienced something like this in some fashion.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you. The number of people just...
And yep. I was going to say, I never used the hashtag MeToo movement, and I have had extensive transgressions over my past. It's just not something that I've ever felt needed to be public. The person in particular who had the assault on me has tried to reach out to me, and I'm just not at that point where I'm capable of saying, yes, I forgive you for this, because I don't 100%. And I have had people, I've had a man tell me, well, you know, it's better for you to forgive and move on than it is for you to continue and let that fester. And I'm sorry, but this is my life. That was my body. That was my life. That was something that they took advantage of. And that's something that I don't have to forgive. And I'm not going to.
Mm-mm. There's no reason for it.
Yeah, that's no. I go ahead, Mike.
No, all I was going to say is, so many people make excuses for it, you know,
they do.
And that's the bullshit of it. And God, I love cussing. It's awesome. This is going to be great. It's truthfully, it's awesome that people are speaking out against it. And, you know, even for the frippin' president, oh, that's just Trump being Trump saying
No,
that's bullshit. It's complete crap that people make excuses for it. They used to do that when I was in a fraternity, and, you know, they used to make fun of the women, you know, they used to have contests about, you know, how many women could so-and-so sleep with, or, you know, they had a scorecard or crap like that, or, oh, that person's drunk, let's take advantage of them. No, you don't do shit like that. And it's been going on for more than just Harvey Weinstein. And
oh my gosh, it's been going on since the dawn of time.
Yeah, exactly. And it's ridiculous. You know, like Lacey, I lived in Los Angeles and I worked with the movie industry back then. And I, you know, was also involved with improv at Second City. And I saw a lot of this crap going on. A couple women, you know, it was almost like, not that they were doing it to get ahead, but it was almost like par for the course. If, you know, oh, they had to have a boob slip out, or, oh, so-and-so was in a casting thing and they happened to do a little favor for somebody and just so they can get the job. Mm-hmm. And that's ridiculous. And it was, hey, par for, like I said, par for the course. People almost expected it. And, oh, and I'm not just talking about Harvey Weinstein. This was pretty commonplace out there at that time.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but the idea that Lacey was reprimanded for not giving into somebody's advances just takes that even a step further. Like, not only did it happen, but she was in the wrong for that.
Exactly.
Yep.
And like,
that's something that actually happened.
Oh, well, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. some of these people who I was working with and, you know, acting with, if they didn't put out or whatever, they were like, oh, she's frigid. She was frigid, or, yeah, oh, you don't want to work with her because she does
difficult
that.
To work with.
Exactly.
Difficult to work with.
Yeah. And, you know, you get that in a lot of industries, especially not just in the Hollywood industry and the subsidiaries of it, but pretty much anything that is primarily a male dominated field. And one of the really unique effects that I've seen happen is Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson. Have you guys stopped to actually look at that? Like, their Super Bowl experience back in, what was it, like 2004 or whatever, where there was the quote-unquote costume malfunction. From right. that moment forward, Justin Timberlake shot off, and he was asked to be on that by Janet Jackson. She asked him to come out and do this song with him because she felt that it would be good for him, and it was. But because of that, he has been able to shoot forward while she has been blacklisted. She doesn't get gigs anymore. They don't play her videos on MTV. They don't do, I mean, granted, MTV doesn't technically exist in the capacity that it did at the time. Yeah, but like, her career has pretty much come to a standstill. People do not, she will never be the Janet Jackson that she was or that she could have been from that moment forward. But he's been able to move on and just got another Super Bowl gig, and nobody's even batted an eyelash at it.
No, if you remember,
it's
also,
because boobs are there for men's pleasure. That's it. Boobs are there because boys need to see them. Yeah. They're not a function for nurturing children. They're not. It's all about the men needing to see the boobs.
No, I was going to say, because even we've talked about it with Michelle when she's been on our show. And we've talked about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and how Janet Jackson was nominated, but she's fallen off the ballot because of that.
There's a couple of issues there, but yes, I mean, Janet's been on the Hall of Fame ballot at least twice, and you'd think she'd be a no-brainer, but yet she is struggling. She's not even in the fan vote, she's struggling, and I think part of that is what Dacoma's talking about. But I also think that part of it is race, and there's maybe some other stuff there too. I don't know the full, like, you know, story behind that, but
I mean, yeah. I don't know that we'll ever know the full story behind it, but the thing is it definitely needs to be made aware.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point, the wardrobe malfunction incident, I mean, it's still, you know, because of Justin's recent Super Bowl gig, that became obviously a story again. And I saw, read a lot of stories about it as well, trying to get behind. And there's still a lot of mystery as to what exactly happened and who was responsible and all that kind of stuff as well. So yeah, it is weird. But you're right. I mean, how, you know, but the results are that, you know, the here we saw a depiction of, you know, of a man doing something to a woman. And you're right. The alleged victim is in this scenario, the victim depicted is blacklisted while the other, the man is rewarded. So, I mean, that's just,
and that's just one instance. I mean, there right. are, especially in Hollywood, there are millions to go around. But the thing is this happens in every single field. In, like I said, in particular, it happens in male-dominated fields. If you work as one of my best friends, her eldest daughter is a very well-known chef, and she has had nothing but harassment and issues almost every place that she has ever worked because she's considered a bossy, hard-to-work-with woman. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that she is a woman in a male-dominated field, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that she does not give in to people's advances. And you are not considered, I guess, compatible in those fields if you're not willing to be like, oh, that was pretty funny. Like, oh, that's so sweet. Thank you for paying attention to me. I mean, and it's just, it's disgusting.
Yeah, restaurants are a nightmare.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And the kitchens in particular are, I've worked in every restaurant chain from beginning, I mean, you know, not to name names, but it's always, yeah. And it's from the busboys to the chefs to the everybody, like everyone.
Well, and here's the thing, Lacey, you don't want to name names, but at the same time, when are we going to?
No, I meant like restaurant chain names.
That's what I mean is like these mm-hmm. corporations are the ones and these industries are the ones who are coddling these people and saying that this is maybe it's time for them to stop and take a look at it. And that's basically what the foundation of the Me Too movement was a few people stood up and said, you know what, we're not going to do this anymore. And they go ahead.
And let me ask you this though. Okay. So, but yes, I mean, obviously I made the connection and because I don't know if it's entirely coincidental. But obviously I made the connection between, you know, the debut of the Wonder Woman movie, finally, with a strong female protagonist directed by a woman. Yes, I was just getting to that. And being a big success. And there does seem to be a wave of pro-women, just a movement, right? And whether do you think, or besides the movie Wonder Woman, or do you think that some of it is coming from things in pop culture?
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that a lot more job positions have become female, open to female, or women have worked their way into these positions and not given in to the, you know, conforming to the standards that they're supposed to, you know, stay at home and raise the children and, you know, be pregnant and barefoot in the kitchen. So a lot of the women who are now in higher positions have the ability to, you know, green light projects that are, you know, directed by women and, you know, female cinematographers and, you know,
I mean, my opinion of that is 50-50. Like, I do firmly believe, because we have statistically, if you look at the numbers, seen a sharp increase of extremely talented women that have been able to come forward and start building names in that industry and in other industries. But I think as far as pop culture goes, a lot of it from this point forward is playing, a lot of it is getting a factor played into by the fact that the media is talking about it so much and there is such a pot stirring going on. People are paying attention to it and it's a way for them to quietly soothe us. I'm not going to lie. Like, I am definitely one of those people who goes out to marches and raises banners and calls people out on their bullshit. But I don't think everything is enough, and I do think that's a way for them to placate us.
Gotcha. So, in one sense, having a movement is awesome because it brings awareness, yes, or at least a spotlight to it. But on the other hand, calling it a movement by definition means, oh, it's only a temporary thing.
I well, and here's the thing is I don't want to say that it's a temporary thing.
It's a trend.
It's too early for us to say that, but in our current day and age, with the way that social media and things just kind of rotate around, there's no way for us to really tell whether or not this is going to be a movement or a trend. Not right now. I would really like to say that it's going to be something that continues on and we actually have a complete like conversion. But the thing is we've been working at this for over 100 years now. Mm-hmm. To be realistic.
Well, in the course of things, in the course of your life, do you feel that overall things have gotten better?
Geographically, as far as me being an American citizen, I won't even say yes to that, but I can't say yes to that just because I have had a lot of personal instances where I have been hindered because of the fact that I'm a woman or because I turned down somebody's advances in my personal careers. So, I mean, and that's a very pessimistic way for me to look at it. And I understand that. I do want to see it go forward. And I do want to see it triumph to whatever ends that may be. And hopefully it doesn't end and we get a full mesh going on. But out of my brief 32 years on the planet, I can't say that we've really won anything. We're still not making as much as men are. We're still not dominating fields. We've seen an increase, yes, of people who are, or of women, qualified women who are in roles that were previously primarily occupied by men. But I'm not seeing it close enough and personally enough for me to go, yes, I can see this impact happening.
Well, one impact that I'm seeing is that now, especially with some of the men that I work with and I have several different jobs and it's just sort of a across the board kind of a thing. But now there's a timidity, but there are certain people that have come at me as being female is now a power play. Like I was in the middle of a conversation with someone that I had known for several years. This person had been to my house by himself. He's a married man. He's far older than me. There's no, you know, nothing going on there. But the second we were in the middle of a conversation and we were disagreeing about something, not a disagreement, like just a discussion. Yeah. We did not have the same view on something. And I said, well, no, wait a minute. And when I stated my opinion, he actually said, wait, stop. We need to step outside. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, I don't know what claims you'll make after this conversation is over. We need to be somewhere where we are visible to other people because I'm a woman. And he actually used the words, you're a woman. I don't know what claims you're going to make after this conversation.
From a conversation.
Right. Because we were arguing, not even arguing. It was like, he said something. I said, wait, hold on. That's not exactly right now, is it? Or something like that. It was very mild conversation with a person that I've known for 5 or 6 years. And it just sort of slapped me in the face. And I thought he was joking. And he really wasn't kidding. He walked to the door and opened the door and walked outside. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? What just happened here? Like, really? We're going outside so that people can see us talking? What? I mean, it was crazy.
I mean, so, let people see you talk. Like, who cares?
Right. Like,
I've got nothing to fucking hide.
Like, right. But it was just this weird thing. I mean, we weren't standing in a quiet, enclosed space. I mean, there were windows everywhere. If someone had walked by, they would have seen us talking.
Here's the ticker tape with facts.
Right. It was just this really bizarre, like, because you are a woman, I don't know what you're going to say about what my actions were. Like, kind of, and it blew my mind.
That's crazy. I have a really funny story. And I say it's funny because I'm able to take it with a lightheartedness, but it recently happened to me and it very much fits the scheme of this or this spectrum of what we're talking about tonight. So, I work at an IT company. I'll let everybody know that I work at an IT company and, I had recently sent out an email for a part that, I needed that the people had not sent me when they returned the device I was working on. And I had sent it apart to the entire southeastern region of my area and said, hey, does anybody have this particular make, model, blah, 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 blah. I didn't get one back and I need it in order for me to get this back into play. And it goes out to several hundreds of people for this company that I work for. And this person who I've spoken to, at this point I had only spoken to him probably 1 to 3 times, but we had had a good conversation. It was online, and we were just working. He was helping me work through a different problem. He responds, oh God, I wish I had the email. He responds with, I got you, baby. Just give me the address and I'll get it sent on Monday. But he hit reply all.
Oh.
So everyone saw it. So I get home because I was working from home that afternoon. So I get home and I get online and I see this email, and like part of me goes white and red, A, because it's both mortifying for him, and red because I'm furious, absolutely furious that this person would have the audacity to call me baby. But then I see that he put reply all, and it was like 10 minutes ago. I sent everyone, I sent a reply all to that, thanks toots. And then responded to him in a separate message and just like, if this were any other circumstance, I would ream you out right now. And I'm like, but the fact that you hit reply all means you pretty much took care of it for me. And I, of course, notified his former manager, who's my former manager, and was just like, I'm not upset about this. Like, he's clearly taking care of it himself. I'm sure he'll think twice before he does this again. And my manager assured me that he had talked with him and said, you know, even if you know this person, you should probably keep him professional while you're at work. But that was a funny instance to change our extremely serious conversation we were having. And it is a very serious matter, but I mean, points like that do happen. And I do work in a male dominated field. So that is definitely a thing. One of the things I'm interested about, to kind of change the subject again, one of the things I'm interested in seeing how it plays out is how this whole effect has, how it's going to affect the pop culture going forward. As far as like me as a consumer, I will not go see things or watch things that are produced by somebody who I know treats people like that. Like I am an aware consumer, and as a consumer, the only thing I have to prove that I have a say in things are my dollars. I'm not going to give somebody, you know, the $15 or $20 it takes for me to go and see a movie, or my monthly subscription or whatever, or my views or my likes, if I don't believe in what's going on. And granted, that's extremely hard, especially considering there are so many things that we just don't even know about. But like the Jeepers Creepers guy, the guy who directs the Jeepers Creepers movies is a convicted pedophile. I won't watch his movies. And he's owned by Disney, which completely baffles me. But I
think also with this, we are starting to see that Hollywood is at least afraid of it. I mean, Ridley Scott doesn't reshoot an entire movie and replace Kevin Spacey with Christopher Plummer if they're not afraid of this, right?
Yeah.
Like they spent millions of dollars doing that.
Part of that could be, and I hope that it's not just that he's afraid so much as it is that he recognizes that it's not something that he wants his brand to stand for, because Ridley Scott is a brand.
Well, and there's also the fact that the movie may not have done very well had they not replaced Kevin Spacey. So that's a financial decision as well.
Oh yeah,
right. 100%. But I mean that's really the only thing that a lot of these studios and a lot of businesses, the only thing that registers with them. Like if they're,
oh yeah,
they're, like if it's the moral
that's
thing
true,
to do,
yeah,
then it's all right. But if it's going to cost us money, then you're damn right we're going to like pay attention to that. Like for decades, you know, a woman's action movie just couldn't get it done. They were just not very well supported and they just kept failing, which was, it was a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like women's action movies don't do well, or an action movie starring women doesn't do well. So we're not going to spend,
Goodnight was amazing.
We're not going to spend a lot of money on it. We're not going to spend a lot of money producing it. We're not going to spend a lot of money marketing it. So therefore
it's
always going to fail. Right. But now with Wonder Woman, right? That all of a sudden opens the door So now we have, like, I mean, I'm already starting to see that effect already.
I mean, well, what about year. Proud Mary? What about Proud Mary and the fact that Sony was just like, you know what, we're just not going to support this movie.
Okay,
and that
has a I saw Proud Mary, and it's not good. So
I mean, I haven't watched it, so I can't say that. But.
So I think the fact that it got as much recognition as it did.
Okay, like, fair enough.
But,
I'll give you
but
that.
I'm looking like, at... And you're right, there may be another issue there. You know, there may be a racial issue there as well, because I see, you know, Red Sparrow is doing, you know, it looks like that's being promoted well. Tomb Raider, we got another Tomb Raider movie out of it, you know. Like, we are, like, there's that movie with Natalie Portman coming out that it looks like what they did, they took a... Right. It looks like what they did is they took a script that had a lot of male parts and they, you know, said, let's make these all women, and who's going to notice, right? But yet, when I watched the trailer, I noticed as well, because I said, this is something that usually you see it's a bunch of guys, but it doesn't have to be.
Well,
look at the 50-50 they had on Ghostbusters. When they did a reboot of Ghostbusters, you took something that was an iconic late 90s, mid 90s genre and movie that was all men, and they turned it into women, and you were completely divided. You had tons of people who were supporting it, and then you had tons of people who were bashing it. And most of the people who were bashing it were either because they were nostalgic or because they didn't feel that the lead character should be women.
I actually bashed it because it wasn't that good of a movie.
I haven't watched it. My boyfriend refuses to watch it.
See, I loved the effects in it, and there were things I really enjoyed about that one.
Looked like it was specifically meant to be a much more comedic version.
Yeah.
It was what the original was, where the original was definitely more, it was comedic, of course, but it was more adultish. Like, it was the cusp of an adult movie, but not really an adult movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting because another one that's coming out this year, actually, is the new Oceans movie.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
And like, with a whole female cast. And I think it looks amazing.
Yeah.
And
I think if the companies really take the time to sit down and do things and do them well, and not just like, I will say this, I feel like the Ghostbusters movie with the all female cast was one of those movies that they sent out to kind of placate the masses.
Well, the other thing, though, is look at Black Panther, which just came out, and how amazing the female cast was. I think they blew most of the male cast away.
They took the time to do that right.
Yeah, exactly. Agree completely with that. And that's the great thing about it, if it's done smartly and such. And it's,
well, I mean, I think the answer isn't just like, oh, we're just gonna like take a bad script and put a woman in instead of a guy.
No,
I mean,
not at all.
That's not, I mean, obviously it has
take a good script, they'll put a woman in it, but they won't put the right woman in it.
Well, but I think it depends on, you know, obviously behind the scenes, the writer and the director and the vision, you know, if that's coming from a place of pure progression rather than just like, oh, we're just going to stunt cast this.
Yeah. Now, my question is, how do you all feel about past productions that were done by Weinstein and Company and Miramax as far as like supporting them goes? Because the list is extensive. And I'm not just talking about movies. I'm also talking about television shows.
See, that's tough because Miramax was one of my go-tos.
I know. I mean, Gangs of New York, even Clerks 2, like Pulp Fiction, pretty much anything Quentin Tarantino did.
Or anything Kevin Smith did or, you know, anything like that type of stuff, more of the independent stuff because they tied into a lot of that.
Well, I mean, and I'm a big documentary buff, and they even did what was it, Fast Food Nation?
Well, exactly, or the Coen Brothers.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's hard for me to like, I don't like it. It makes me a little ill to support that, but at the same time, I also have to remember that there are other people in play. Like, he's not the sole person of this company, and granted, the people who were working there did have to sign clauses saying that they would not retaliate or say anything inflammatory about the heads of the company or their, you know, or defame their personal whatevers. which I thought was kind of shitty.
But the thing is, if you think about it, anytime you watch one of those now and they have any kind of female lead or such, how many of them had to placate, you know, Mr. Weinstein, you know, to get that role and such. But then again, I can't watch The Cosby Show anymore.
Yeah, no.
Or
no,
listen to any of Bill Cosby's CDs or
records.
I have a
hard time. We have two, my fiance Robbie has two of the Bill Cosby vintage vinyl stand-up records, and I let him keep them, but I will never listen to them ever.
Oh, we grew up on them. Both of us did.
Yeah. I know.
And I can't listen to them. I mean, I can barely look at Jell-O, you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's you know, I mean, not to make light of it, but it's true. I don't know if I've said this on the show, but I was watching, I was flipping about a month ago or so, I was flipping through the channels, and it was the end of a movie, and they said coming up next is Usual Suspects. And I was thinking, wow, I haven't seen Usual Suspects in a while. So, and then I thought to myself, ugh. Like, I don't know if I can watch that now, because not only Kevin Spacey, but Bryan Singer as well have been implicated in things. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I don't know if I can watch this now. And I'm like, I'm hemming and hawing, trying to make a decision. And then the movie cut starts and it's not Usual Suspects. They replaced it with I can't remember the name of the movie now, but it has Tom Berenger in it. And it involves a racially motivated terrorist and investigating something, a home terrorist that's racially motivated. I'm like, okay, so we're in a point now where this network would rather show a racially motivated terrorist movie than they would a movie that's associated with Kevin Spacey and Bryan Singer. I'm like, that's pretty scary.
If it's not one devil, it's another.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's the other thing too. I mean, we're all going to have to make choices based on, you know, whether you eat at a certain restaurant because of that association with that or that political, like there's a whole like.
Well, I mean, and like I said, like as a consumer, that's our only power is that
absolutely.
We are the ones with the dollars.
Yes.
We are the ones who get the say in that. And they're going to, as an industry, as a series of industries that all have their hands in each other's pockets, they're going to make us look the other way as much as possible. They're going to try to sugarcoat things as much as they can. I will also say that Kevin Spacey's allegations and the way that he handled them was the most frustrating one that I have seen thus far.
Yeah.
Him choosing to put out a Twitter post that deflected not only, I don't want to say the blame per se, because while he did not entirely take blame, he took blame for some of it, but he used the fact that he was coming out as a gay man to deflect the fact that he was sexually assaulting or harassing people who were underage at that. Like in the entire post, like that's all it was. It was this great big propaganda PR thing. And it was the thing that pisses me off is it was eloquently written. Like he knew exactly what he was doing. Yes. And that's so frustrating.
But part of the thing is also, and I'm not trying to cause a controversy here or whatever,
I'm still going to talk to you.
I know. And I appreciate it. Well, the thing is, I've had male friends of mine who've been harassed also.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, it's just not females getting harassed or, sexually.
I mean, Heather Locklear was arrested for beating up her boyfriend. Like,
oh, exactly.
Harassment isn't just sexual.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Harassment is physical. It's verbal. It's, you know, many
mental,
different.
Mental. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Mental abuse and such. And, you know, I've had, you know, family members who've had, you know, female members abusing the husbands or fiancés or boyfriends, you know, mentally and physically. And, you know, it's amazing that, you know, it's on all sides. What was it? Brendan Fraser just came out recently and said he was, you know, sexually abused. And it's not
Terry Crews.
Yeah.
You look at Terry Crews and you're
Terry Crews.
Who's messing with this guy? And yet, you know, I mean, he doesn't need to say that, but yet he, you know, I mean, the, like anybody who comes forward, outside of the, you know, the ones that are, you know, trying to, play the part and use it for their own, agenda. But the true people who are coming forward are so brave.
Have you heard about Callisto?
Enlighten me. Not ringing a bell.
There's actually an app that, well, there's a group that's trying to create an app for, because, okay, it's called Callisto, and basically you go on the app and you can report a sexual assault and log all the information that you need to log into the app against the person that assaulted you. But if you don't want that to come out because you're afraid to go in it alone, mm-hmm. The app will then notify you if that person is accused by another person.
Oh, that's nice.
So, yeah, so basically it's the idea that knowing you're not alone,
yeah,
will help you like frame the experience and be able to take action with another person.
Yeah.
It's called Callisto. I don't know if they actually have created the app yet or if they're just kickstarting it or something like that, but it's been in like Washington Post and New York Times and all, I mean, I've seen it a million different places. So, it's an interesting,
it's definitely
app,
something you
app
want
to take a look
out,
like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That is really cool.
It's sad that we have to
have something like that. I mean, and that's like the Kickstarter mm-hmm. date rape nail polish that you can stick your finger in your drink and tell whether or not, like, that's really cool. It shouldn't have to exist.
Right.
It just shouldn't have to exist, guys. Come on.
Exactly.
But one of the other things that I wanted to ask you guys about is, do you all have an opinion of the Weinstein & Co. Bankruptcy file and the fact that the deal fell through with what's her name, Marie Sweet, I want to say it is, who used to be the Small Business Administration head for the Obama administration. Did you guys read anything about that?
I don't know much in depth in that.
There was a sale that was in talks with Marie Sweet and Ron Burke, I want to say, who's the billionaire who was backing it. And essentially what it was they were posing to purchase the company for about $275 million and absorb their $225 million worth of debt under the stipulation that basically it would be rebranded and that they would bring in a majority female board members. It would be a majority female board member production company. And the company has decided to decline the offer and file for bankruptcy instead because they feel that they were not serious about actually signing the paperwork and making a deal because they didn't negotiate any interim funds for them to be able to continue to pay their current staff. Which, to me personally, like, I get that you want to keep as many jobs as possible, but the idea of filing for bankruptcy and losing everyone versus being able to save some people and kind of make a point and maybe build things better and prove that maybe you guys did some shit wrong seems like a better option, but I'm not as well versed in the nuances of that. It is something that just kind of came out, I think, yesterday or today. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's some food for thought. Like, this is definitely like other spider legs of this web.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Well, we're getting close to the end of our ability to talk about it, at least on this show. But believe me, the conversation is going to continue. The off air, the as they say, the struggle is real. It continues, obviously. Now, before we go, I would be curious as to hearing from each one of you, like, what is your hope? Do you have hope that because of recent events, is there hope there out there? Tacoma?
I hope that there is. I do firmly feel, despite the fact that I'm kind of pessimistic sounding, I do firmly hope and feel that we will make some headway here. How much we are willing to stand is still to be seen. Struggle's never easy. That's why it's called struggle and not, you know, cheesecake.
Cheesecake is not easy. Have you ever tried to make a cheesecake?
I mean, I meant eating cheesecake.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Let's give cheesecake the credit it deserves. Because damn.
But I do firmly hope that we do make some serious headway, and I would like to see it come down. I want to see make it more of an impact with the everyday masses, because we are the general populace. And if it takes us starting with our pop figures and spreading out from there, so be it. I just want to see it happen. I don't want Lacey to be reprimanded for having her ass grabbed. I don't want to be fired from a workplace for turning down an advance of a manager. I don't want to watch my sister be told that she was asking for it. I don't want those things to happen, and I don't want them to be ignored.
Well said. Lacey?
I kind of, when it comes to hope, it's so subjective. I'm a very hopeful person in general. Sarcasm aside, But at the same time, you know, I grew up in the South where you're always, you know, women were taught to be polite and sweet. And, you know, I've never really conformed to that standard of living. So I've always kind of been a break his fingers first and ask for names later kind of person. So I feel like the hope is there. It's just a matter of how many people we can get on board with it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Mike.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts?
Well, last thoughts are, we're just at the beginning of this. I don't think we've seen, you know, the true effects of it. I think we have a long way to go. I'm glad we have the Me Too movement. I'm glad we are calling attention to this, and it almost feels like every day we're getting somebody else called out. And I just have to keep on going, did I ever do anything that would offend anybody other than this podcast, you know? So I don't think so. And it's just amazing the names that have been taken down because of this. You had Al Franken, you had what's his name from the Today Show? Matt Lauer. Yeah. And you just hear all these different people. And, you know, I think we're still at the early stages of it. And I hope it goes all the way up to the top. And I hope we see a lot of change. I hope we see a lot of change like that. I hope, you know, you don't have somebody, you know, paying off somebody to keep quiet, or because they're running for office, or that they run a huge corporation or stuff. You know, it should be equal. It should be, you know, people should be treated with respect. And that's what it's all about. And this whole thing, both male and female, is people need to respect each other. And it's, what's happening is a lack of respect. And it sucks.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, as I think Tolstoy said, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing.
Nothing.
And, you know, the fact that, you know, to paraphrase, you know, I think that good women are doing something, good people are doing something, and we're not going to let evil triumph. And I think that, you know, the struggle is there. But I do feel that there's hope, because a lot of people feel that they're just not enough's enough, right? It's we're not going to stand for this anymore. It doesn't have to be this way. Things that have been this way for, and you're just like, well, that's just the way things are. It doesn't have to be, and that's, I think, very, very much, very, very hopeful. So I thank you all for joining us. This is great. It's nice to have great discussions, entertaining discussions on, you know, sensitive topics. I think that speaks well of all of us. So thank you for that.
Awesome. Let me know when you have your gun control argument. we'll do a gun control podcast, and we can tackle. Let's get on the list.
I hear a spinoff show coming, Mike.
A new podcast on the ESO network. Yes, called Politically Oigewalt.
And on that note, we'll be right back with the ESO Network Con Report.
I want to spit in the face.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about some of her favorite indie geeky clothing brands. Now, I think I've done an episode similar to this in the past, but I figured it's always fun to go back and talk about the awesome geeky clothing brands that I love, and there may be some new ones on this list. Now, I'm going to start off with a brand called Little Petal. This is a company out of New York, and they make geeky wrap dresses that can be any character that you want, and they can be tied in over 40 different ways, which means one dress can be worn over 40 different ways. These look super intimidating when you first look at them and try to like figure them out, but they're really, really easy once you take the time to kind of figure it out and then look at some of the tutorials on her webpage. They are super soft and they have pockets, which for ladies is a big deal in apparel. And they're like deep pockets. They're not like blue jean pockets. I own one of these and I adore it so much. So if that's something you're interested in, you can type in Little Petal on Google or Facebook and they should pop up if you can find them online. Now, the next brand I want to talk about is called L. Hoffner Designs. This chick creates some seriously awesome apparel. She's out of Los Angeles. Her designs are all nerd themed. And I actually own a lot of these sweaters and they're really well, like, really great quality. And she also does dresses and skirts, and you've probably seen her work on the cosplays of John Barrowman if you looked at any of his convention antics last year. She helped create his TARDIS dress and part of the Squirrel Girl costume he wore too. And then the last geeky designer that I'm going to mention this week is Darling Army. This is a company also out of Los Angeles. They have a lot of like a great geeky indie clothing scene in that area. And so this designer creates really cute, like, cosplay dresses and skirts and kimonos. And there are so many different designs, so many different characters. She has, like, comic book ones, anime ones, sci-fi ones. The skirts are super poofy, which I adore. And, yeah, they're just really, really cute. And, like, the stuff that you could run around at a convention at and just look adorable. So you can also search her name and L. Hoffner's online as well if you type them into Google or Facebook or Instagram or whatever your chosen social media is. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What am I going to talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey everyone, welcome back. It's now time for the ESO Con Report.
Con!
Yes, folks, it's me still here. Mike is still on assignment, and we are here talking with the mayor of Chickentown, Felicity herself. That's right, she went to a con out in sunny Los Angeles, California about 2 weeks ago. She was at Gallifrey One. And welcome to the show.
Thank you. I was at Gallifrey One indeed for my 18th consecutive time.
18?
18.
Wow.
Yeah. I actually met someone who's been there one more than me. So, and I think, you know, there are some people who've been to every single one. But I think I'm up there in terms of longevity of attending Gallifrey.
Wow. I remember seeing you there, I think it was 2 years ago when Judy and I went.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And we actually went there with Mary Ogle from Earth Station Who, and it was an amazing Doctor Who con. And each year, people tell me it just gets better and better.
Yeah, it's great each year, but I honestly think this year was one of the best. And even though I was sick and sober, I was not drinking because I was sick, I had just a fantastic time.
What is the draw for Gallifrey One?
For me, honestly, because I have so many friends there who go every year and I room with the same three people I've been rooming with, you know, pretty much the whole time, for me, it's a chance to to see old friends. You know, like Dragon Con is a kind of a family reunion for many people. I feel like Gallifrey is that for me. And just, it's a really well-organized convention. They cap the attendance, so you know it's always, you know, it's never going to grow beyond a certain size. And it has, you know, obviously grown quite a bit in the time that I've been going, because when I started in 2001, the show was off the air. The convention was actually held up in Van Nuys. It wasn't till after the show came back that they moved to the back to the LAX Marriott. So I started going when it was about, you know, 700 to 800 people, and now it's capped at like 3,600 mm-hmm. people or so. And yeah, so it's big, but it's not like Dragon Con big.
No, so, but it's interesting because the tickets go real quick. It's almost like San Diego Comic Con type quick.
Yeah, I think actually last year they didn't go instantly like they had the past couple of years. I think because they've fiddled around with the way of the procedure for transferring tickets, so people probably don't jump on tickets unless they're pretty sure they can go. Although there is still the possibility to transfer to someone else if you have purchased tickets and find out that you can't go. It's just not as easy as it used to be, I think. So people really try to make sure they can make that commitment before they jump on the tickets. They did still go, you know, within a couple of days, but it wasn't within minutes.
Oh, that's still awesome that they were able to do that. And I'm glad they keep it at a certain size, because I remember when I went, it felt manageable. It was crowded, but it wasn't like overflowing and people pressed like everywhere against you.
Yeah, I think that's important to the con runners. And, you know, it is a volunteer-driven con, and they do keep all the activities within this one hotel. Even though there are overflow hotels very nearby where people can stay, all of the actual, you know, convention programming takes place in the one hotel. And they don't want to make it bigger than that, and I'm perfectly fine with that. I think that they make it the size that they can manage, and it's a great con. You know, obviously a lot of people love it and keep coming back, but there's room for new people to come in. And, you know, I met people for whom it was their first Gallifrey and had a great that they, you know, would they'll start to, you know, they want to come back over and over again, of course, but there's always new people there. So it's not just the same 3,600 people every time.
Oh, it's you again. Now it is. It's interesting to see. And a lot of people there get to really associate with the guests too.
This year was no exception. And in fact, you know, Stephen Moffat came back. He had been there a couple of times in the past before he became the showrunner. Then obviously he was kind of busy and didn't really want to be, you know, wasn't as accessible to people because he was working so hard on the show. But he came back this year and he was hanging out in the bar every night.
Really? That is awesome.
He's super, super funny for one thing. I forgot how quick-witted he is. And, you know, I saw a couple of discussions with him and then a live commentary for Twice Upon a Time, the most recent Christmas special that was Peter Capaldi's last episode. And he's so funny. It's uncanny, really, how sharp he is.
That is awesome.
I guess you know from the, you know, he writes good dialogue. You can tell that. You know, he has a comedic sense, but it's just amazing to see in person.
Oh, sure. Definitely could see that. What was your highlights, though, for this year, other than Moffat?
Other than Moffat, they actually had David Bradley there as well. So he was playing the first Doctor in the Christmas special, and he had played both William Hartnell and the first Doctor in An Adventure in Space and Time, which was like a factual film made about the creation of Doctor Who in that aired in the 50th anniversary year, just a few years back. And he's just super charming. You know, he's plays some pretty serious villains in other fandom. You know, in Harry Potter, he was Filch. And on Game of Thrones, he was Walder Frey, you know, one of the most despicable characters there is.
The Red Wedding.
Yeah. But he's just super charming and just seemed really happy to be there. I saw him on both in a discussion panel and then doing the commentary. He was very funny during that as well. And, you know, making quips about, you know, I was just counting. I was, you know, when everyone got quiet for a minute, Stephen Moffat said, oh, you know, we have to remember to talk. We can't just sit and watch it. And David Bradley said, oh, I'm just counting my lines.
Mm-hmm. I definitely could understand that. That's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, because you've been saying when I've been talking to you off the air, this has been my best Gallifrey ever. And
it was actually, yeah, I mean, it was not just the guests. I mean, although I think that they were, you know, the best guests I've had in a while. There's always people I want to see. There's always people I've seen before. And I kind of balance the panels I go to with the time I have and the friends that I want to see. But I actually participated in more panels this year than I have in a while. I signed up for, was selected to be on 3, and then also was asked to be in a live podcast recording for my friend Graham's podcast, Reality Bomb. That was tons of fun, but also all 3 panels that I was on were very good. And one of them was more of kind of like a game as well. So just everything that I participated in was fun. Everything that I saw was great, and got a lot of good quality time with my friends and made quite a few new friends. I think that I was, for some reason, feeling very outgoing. I think I was hyped up on prednisone still from my bronchitis. So I was just very wired, and maybe not having alcohol was also a help, that I was just kind of more present. And I just went out of my way to just, you know, talk to strangers, make new friends. I met people on the plane coming from Boston, and that we rode the shuttle together. And then I wound up actually knowing 7 people on the flight back. You know, that couple, a couple I had met at LIHU, and a couple of people who I met in flight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. That's awesome. So it sounds like it was a great show, and I'm sure you're already counting down the days to the next one.
Yep. This is always going to be, a important weekend for me, and I'm going to keep going as long as my friends are going, and as long as they keep doing the convention. Next year is actually going to be the 30th year, and they're planning, I know, some big things for that, and I look forward to when they start to announce guests for that. I know that they're going to put together something special.
Oh, 30? I'd almost expect. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if David Tennant didn't show up for that.
Mm-hmm.
And many others. So that is awesome. Well, Felicity, thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Felicity, for talking all about Gallifrey. And now we are here with our friend from earlier, Lacey. Welcome to the show, Lacey.
Hello.
We are all going to talk about the Huntsville Comic and Pop Expo. Yesterday and Saturday, it was this past weekend, it was up in Huntsville, and it was a blast. And you actually are one of the people who helped run it.
Yes. I'm in charge of the charity events, or the charity auction at this point. So yeah, it was really fun. I had a great time.
It was at Von Braun Center. And yes, it's a really interesting place because it's a huge convention center right in downtown Huntsville. And it's a really neat setup. It has 2 floors, and the area you had for the main area for the vendors was awesome. You know, it was huge and totally packed the whole time, both on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, I think they had a really good turnout. I haven't gotten the numbers yet from Jeremy. He's the creator of the con. He runs the con with his family, but I haven't gotten the numbers yet. I'm estimating over 5,000 this year, which is more than 25% more than last year, which is, you know, for the third year, that's a pretty good pop in attendance. So,
well,
excited.
It was neat to see, because they also not only had the con at the Von Braun Center, but they also had a volleyball tournament on the other side. And yes, it was just, and so we had people coming in for that and then going, oh, comics and sci-fi too. Awesome. So,
right.
And so it was neat to see. And for, you know, Huntsville, we've had great times in Huntsville with Con K, and this is my first time going to a comic show there. I was impressed at the numbers and the costumes that you guys got at the show.
Yeah, this year they had a cosplay contest. And I think last year they had a small one, but this year they really advertised the cosplay competition. And then they had a cosplay photo booth that was specifically set up for everyone to come and get their cosplay, aside from the other photo booth that was for you know, celebs and, you know, the photo op section. So it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. It was neat to see. And I loved, you know, the guests were great. You guys had lines around the building almost for the Power Rangers.
Oh yeah. We had two Power Rangers there this year. And we also had Kevin Sorbo, who played Hercules. We had several comic artists, including half of the team who created Deadpool. Fabian was there, and I apologize because I can't pronounce his last name, but he is delightful. We had a whole bunch of really cool guests this year. So
that is awesome. And it was neat. I got to meet a ton of people, saw some friends I haven't seen in a while, saw a photographer, Brian Humphreys. I got to see Matthew from Concaster Burris, and I got to meet some friends of mine who are now friends of mine because they were listeners to the Flopcast of all shows that stopped by our table. Oh, ESO Network. I listened to one of your shows. It was pretty darn awesome. And it's just, you know, great to see different people. And I actually even got to have a panel. We got to talk about the Marvel MCU on TV. And it was a great little turnout. And we had a nice little discussion for an hour. So it was fun.
I was really bummed I had to miss it because I was running the charity auction in the next room over.
Aha. So
we were at competing time slots.
Darn them and everything. So it was awesome. And I know, you know, I'm assuming there'll be another one next year.
Another con or another
con.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They're already getting prepped and ready to go. And we're going to have our postmortem, have a little, you know, have conversations about what worked and what didn't. And all that kind of stuff and what's going to happen next year. So, but we haven't had that yet. So I don't know any specifics. So
it should be interesting to see what happens. And I definitely would recommend this. If you guys are anywhere within probably 200 miles of Huntsville, it's definitely worth the ride to go to Atlanta. It's only 3 hours away. And, you know, Nashville is like an hour and a half and Chattanooga is like an hour. So it's not all that far from a lot of different places. And, you know, Huntsville, they come out and they give you a great show for your bargains.
And there are so many other things to do in Huntsville. If you want to come, like, you know, there's stuff to do at night. There's stuff to do for the con at night as well. But, you know, if you come a couple days early, you can go to Huntsville Space and Rocket Center at, you know, Marshall. And there are so many, you know, fun restaurants and little things that we got to do. It was nice.
It's going to be great. And, you know, Huntsville is just one of those towns you could spend days in and not get bored. And it's really fun. So definitely worth checking out. Thanks for inviting me, Lacey. And thank you, Jeremy and Jennifer, for also having me. ESO was welcomed very nicely, and we do appreciate it.
Absolutely. We had a great time having you there.
Well, thank you, Mike and Lacey. That sounded like, look, I really wanted to go to the Huntsville Expo this past weekend. And I had other plans, including I did actually end up going to a convention myself. So I guess I'll talk about that just for a bit. I went to the, it was in Columbus, and it was the Columbus Comic and Toy Con at the Coca-Cola Space Center in Columbus, Georgia. It's a small show, very small. It's a very small space science center, but it's very cool. I had been to the Space Center before, but I'd never been there when there was a show there. And apparently they have one, I think, every so often. I think it's a few times a year. And I accompanied our good friend of the station, the award-winning writer Bobby Nash, hung out with him for a day. It was cool. There was like vendors, there was some comics being sold, some toys, of course, and I had a pretty decent crowd. They had a nice kids contest and some costume contest and everything. So your typical small show, really. But the fact that it was at the Science Center was really cool, because they were showing — the Science Center usually is not open on Sundays, but because they do have an events there every once in a while, they do still open up all of their exhibits. And they have a planetarium, they have a telescope, they have a screening of, I think the movie was All About Astronauts. They used to have one there that was narrated by Tom Baker, which is pretty cool. That's the one I saw when I was there. So I don't know if that's still there. But so, yeah, it's a really cool little space center. I had fun. So look for that. If you guys are anybody is thinking about going to Columbus or in the Columbus area. And I know, like I said, I'm not sure when the next one is, but I know that they do other multiple shows a year. So I think it's like 3 or 4 a year. So check out the Columbus Comic and Toy Show. It's a fun little gig. So, yeah, so we both do. I think there was that for both of us. That was our first convention of the year, right? Yours was in Huntsville and mine was in Columbus.
Yes, sir.
So now that we've popped our convention cherry for 2018, now we're ready to really get going because March is full. Like we are doing a lot of shows in March. There's a lot of conventions in March, starting with March 2nd through the 4th. That's this weekend. It is MarsCon in Bloomington, Minnesota. Now, neither Mike and I will be there, which is unfortunate because Cornflake, one of the co-hosts of the Flopcast, will be there once again. And yes, she will be doing dementia water aerobics, people, both on Saturday and on Sunday. This is something that one day I have to experience. But so unfortunately, I will not be there this year. But if you are anywhere near the Bloomington area, you must check out, if nothing else, because MarsCon is a big convention, but at least one item on the schedule on both Saturday and Sunday is Cornflake taking people through dementia water aerobics. So that's pretty awesome. There's also lots of other cool stuff happening there as well. So yes, check out MarsCon that weekend. And then the weekend after that, we are very honored to be part of Toylanta and participate in panels. I believe both of our panels are on Sunday. Is that correct, Mike?
Yes, sir. We are both at 12 noon. We're doing the pop figure panel. And at 2 p.m., we are doing Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, so come check us out and talk about all things pop culture, pop, Funko figures, and of course, Masters of the Universe. Those are going to be fun topics. We'll be recording those, both of those panels as well. You may have to do something extra to get to listen to those. Well, not the pop folk, the pop one, the Funko one, we will be recording and we'll air that as part of a regular Earth Station One podcast. But the Masters of the Universe one, I think, Mike, that's going up on Patreon, right?
Yes, sir. It's going to be one of our next ones going up.
So, yes, we will be recording those panels as well. So if you want to be on an episode of Earth Station One and in the crowd, we'd love to have you. And Toyland is a great show anyway. We've got great friends of the station that are going to be there. There's going to be music by the Possum King and Ramblers, by Radio Cult. It's going to be a fun time. So we'll hope to see you there. The weekend after that is March 18th. It's the Atlanta Comic Convention in the very same hotel as Toylanta. That is the Marriott Century Center. Mike and I will be there. We will not have a table, but we'll be wandering around. Mike will still be looking for toys, and I will be looking for comics. I'm sure Mike looks for comics too, but not as much as toys.
Oh, you'd be surprised what I found this last weekend.
I probably would. And then the week after that, March 23rd through the 25th in Baltimore, Maryland, it's Regeneration Who, which is a very sizable Doctor Who gathering. The geek girl herself, Angela Pritchett, will be there, and the mayor of Chickentown, who you just heard talking about all about her experiences at Gallifrey One, is still wanting more Doctor Who convention experience. So she will be at Regeneration Who as well. And Mike and I will not be able to attend that one because we will be in Greenville, South Carolina at the SC Comic-Con. Yes, that's right. The SC Comic-Con in Greenville. Mike and I love this show, and it loves us back in a lot of ways. So it's a great experience. We'll have tables. Mike will be there. He'll have a table with the ESO Network and Nerd Bliss. He'll be sharing that table with another ESO Network show. And I will have a table with Peter Cutler. We'll be selling issues of Tiki Zombie. And this is, if you are looking for the a copy of the ESO Tales of the Station, you'll be able to get it at both tables. So if you can't find one of us, the other one will have it. So But yes, there'll be plenty of other friends of the station there. SC Comic Con is a great show. We can't speak highly enough about it. And they've got great guests. Yes, Robert himself will be joining us in the next week or so to talk all about the details. But I can tell you that it's a convention that you don't want to miss. If you are in the Southeast area, it's perfectly located. At Greenville, South Carolina is a great spot. It's close to Charlotte. It's close to Tennessee. It's close to Atlanta. I mean, you can get there from any place in the Southeast pretty easily. So we hope to see you there. It's going to be a great show. The weekend after that is March 30th through April 1st, and it's the first ever SpyCon, and that's in Atlanta, Georgia. I will be there. There'll be some other friends of the station there as well. Alan J. Porter will be there, which I'm very excited about. It's been a long time since we've had Alan on the show, but I've never met Alan in person, so I'm very excited to meet him at SpyCon. But we'll have some more details about that. That is a show that's organized by our good friend Anthony Taylor. And then finally in May, I am pleased to announce that I will be once again with Peter Cutler at MomoCon. We will be in Artist Alley set up there, and we are very excited to be participating in that big, big, big show of Atlanta once again. So lots of shows coming up in March and then into April, May. We'll have some more details on some more April shows a little bit later, but man, March is busy, 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 busy. But if you've got a convention that you want us to help promote that's happening in March or later on in the year, please reach out to us because we love talking about conventions.
So let's go wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. And man, this was a good one to talk about. And thank you, everybody who joined us tonight. It was a blast. Let's thank our guests very quickly. Lacey, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
And it was wonderful spending time with you in Huntsville.
I had a great time. I had a blast.
Yeah, exactly. It was a blast. And thank you for talking all about that on top of the main topic. Whew. A lot to talk about tonight. Anything you want to shout out about?
The movie Hard Candy. I literally was just talking about it off the air. I know that we have an interesting topic this week, and it's an important topic, but 2005, Hard Candy, female-driven, excellent, excellent film. Check it out if you get a chance.
That sounds awesome. Definitely does. And, of course, Tacoma.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. I was really flattered to be asked to come on and talk about this. So,
well, it's a good topic, and I think this is not going to be the last time we talk about it on the show.
Well, no. I hope that it has many more conversations on and off air.
Oh, I hope so, too. I hope this starts full dialogue with people at home. I really
true that.
Do.
True that. I would also like to plug a movie to follow up with Hard Candy.
Sure.
Starry Eyes is a kind of cult horror movie, which has a female lead in it as well. It is available on Netflix, and it kind of talks about the darker undertones of Hollywood. So it's relatively along the same lines, but if you're a horror fan like I am, then you should probably like it.
We'll have to definitely give it a watch. Thank you so much. And of course, we'll see you next month, hopefully back on the DragonCon report.
Yep, yep.
Okay, Mr. Mike, we made it through another one, my friend.
We did, and as always, it was my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about?
I do. I got to give a big shout out to a band I've been waiting over 30 years to see. And unfortunately, the circumstances were not ideal, but because one of the things that I guess if you want to say a good thing that came out after the passing of Prince was that the Revolution got back together and toured. And it is bittersweet because they are still one of the best bands in the world. And the music is amazing. The songs are amazing. And, they are doing what they can to keep the songs and Prince's legacy alive in a way that it's very moving. There's not a dry eye in the house. There are a lot of tears, but a lot of just a really powerful performance. One of the most powerful performances I've ever seen. I guess from what I understand, that they are they're interested in continuing on as a band. So that should be interesting to see what they do next. But if you have a chance to see them, I'd strongly recommend it. It's well worth the time, because it's look, I mean, even though Prince is not with them, this is, I mean, Prince did not choose these people to play with him on such an iconic period of his career, because they were just there. I mean, these are some of the best musicians in the world, and playing together some of the best songs ever written. And it was just a great night. And I tried to, if anybody follows me on social media, I apologize. I tried to take some pictures, but the place was moving so much. Like, there was such a big crowd, and all my pictures are blurry. So I can't, I was like, wow, I thought I took a couple here that were like focused, but nope, they were all blurry of some kind. But very special, and I hope they come back again, and I will be there if they do.
That sounds awesome. It was, from what, you weren't the only friend of the show who was there, and not.
No, I was not.
No, there were plenty of us there, and from what everyone said, it was just an amazing show.
It was.
I haven't heard one thing negative about it, other than Prince wasn't there. You know, that would have been kind of scary if he did.
Mike, he was there
in spirit.
He was there. He was there in spirit, and he was very much there.
That's totally. I could understand that. Definitely cool that you did that, and you know, that's the reason you weren't in Huntsville with me. So it's worth it. Yeah, definitely, it was worth it to go to Huntsville, and we talked all about that during the con report. My shout out, real quick, goes to, I would like to say friend of the show, and maybe someday he shall be, but out to Kevin Smith. Came across the wire today that Kevin actually had a major heart attack last night while he was on stage, talking about dying on stage. And thank God he didn't. He finished his set, and he was feeling uncomfortable and was having pains and such. And he got taken to the hospital, and he literally had 100% clogged arteries. And, you know, basically the portion that he was blocked is usually called the Widowmaker, and thank God he made it, and they were caught it in time, but he still had the heart attack and such. So now he's in recovery, and recovering probably for quite some time, and I wish him the best, and you know, quick recovery, Kevin Smith. You are one of my idols and somebody who helped me get started towards a podcast. I've met you once, and I'll tell the story someday on my, whenever we have a free show or something. And it was a neat experience meeting him and Jason, but it was just to hear that. And it just like almost floored me for a Monday morning. And it was like, I had to go to a couple different sites to make sure it wasn't just a joke or something. And to find out that it actually happened, it was just like, wow. So, you know, it can happen to anybody.
Oh, that's true. That's absolutely true. Did you tell that story when we did our Kevin Smith episode?
Yes, I did.
So people can seek that out if they're interested to find out more about our feelings on Kevin Smith.
Oh, exactly. And thank God we didn't have to do a Kevin Smith memorial show tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And that would have been tough. That would have been real tough. But it was a tough topic. Thank you, everybody, for sticking with us through this one. And thank you, Marlene, for joining us for the Geek Seat segment. It was a lot of fun hearing about your writings and such. So we had a really interesting show this week. And folks, there's support groups out there. If you've ever run into this kind of harassment or such, don't hide from it. Be it, you know, talk to somebody about it. There are people to, you know, what's going on and everything. And there is just a lot of people, you know, who are going through this, and you're not alone. And that's why I'm so proud of these people coming out and admitting to, you know, this happened to me by this person, or this happened to me on this job, or this acting. It's just not, you know, not happening to actors and actresses. It's like we've said multiple times on the show. it's happening to people all over the world and in everyday jobs, and you don't need to take it. You really don't. And that's what the Me Too movement is about. And we'll have a link up in the show notes about that.
I just want to say one more thing to everybody else who's out there listening. If this has happened to you, or if it happens to you in the future, yes, there are support groups, but above all, just know that there's nothing wrong with you.
No, it's not your fault. And that's what they try to make you feel like, it's your fault. It is not at all. Thank you, Tacoma, for saying that. That was a really good way to say that. Whew. Pretty heavy show this week. So we're going to go a little bit lighter next week. We're going to be actually talking about MASH, the TV series.
Aww.
And we are going to be talking about, you know, the way we have it in the show notes, we have it MASH, the TV series that lasted three times longer than the war. So it's pretty awesome. MASH is an iconic show, and it's going to be a blast to talk all about it. And we're going to have a lot of fun with it. Of course, we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at our new email address, which is earthstation1@esonetwork.com. And, you know, phone number is still the same, 404-963-9057. Of course, you know, we have now the new Patreon account, and thank you for everyone.
Thank you.
For people who have been signing up with it. And I am in awe that people are. And we're actually going to have this week up our first new podcasts up there. We've already been submitted by Jason and Rita of the Transmissions from Atlantis. They are going to be our first people having new material up on our Patreon, just for the Patreon people.
Nice.
And so that will be up this week. For anyone who donates for over $5 will get, you know, free access to it. So it's pretty darn awesome. So with that, you know, being said, we also have the Amazon store. We also have the TeePublic link. And, you know, we have some great new t-shirts. And actually, there's a Mike Howdy t-shirt up there now.
There is.
And it's, you know, we're going to surprise him with that. And so, you know, that's up there now. And then there's going to be a Geek Seat t-shirt up there very soon. We have, you know, plenty of different stuff coming. And there's even a new Dragon Con Report logo up there now. So that t-shirts are coming fast and furious. And, you know, people have been buying. Thank you again. This is your way you help support us, and we cannot express how much we do appreciate that here on the network. And me personally, you know, this is my baby. This is, you know, something we put together, Mike and I, every week on our shows, and, you know, all the other hosts and such, and the creators, we put our sweat into this. And thank you guys for supporting us. And we're up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, anywhere else you can find us. You know, please leave feedback, rate us. We'd appreciate it. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors. Can't get much more than that. So with that being said, my name is Mike Faber. I am out of here. I am speechless for tonight. Can you imagine that? And I am gone. I'll talk to you next week. Peace. And we're done.
Cool.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.